KCPW's series Community Curiosities is our chance to answer questions you have about, well, just about anything. This week, instead of answering a question submitted by a listener, we're calling an audible. KCPW producer Tim Pierce has a topic for us to dig into.
Right. So the past few weeks have seen a lot of, you could call it, we'll say speculation about the origins of this pandemic we're living through right now. So there's this narrative out there, which you may or may not have seen, that the virus was genetically engineered and intentionally released.
Where is that idea coming from, Tim?
Well, I think it's that people don't like the idea that the virus kind of sprang from seemingly nowhere, right? So our natural impulse is for stories, and we want a simple story to tell about why this happened, and even if it might not actually be that simple. And we want someone to blame, honestly.
Huh.
And then, also, there's this media report from a couple weeks back. This is on April 15th, and the speaker is Brett Baier, an anchor on the cable television network Fox News.
But there is a growing belief that the COVID-19 virus originated in the Wuhan lab, not as a bioweapon, but as China's effort to find and deal with viruses to show the world China was as good as or better than the U.S. on that front.
Honestly, what Baier is saying here isn't that it was genetically engineered as a bioweapon, but that it escaped from a lab. So it's slightly different than the more, nefarious conspiracy out there. Still, the notion that this is a secret plot, an intentional pandemic, is out there in memes and posts and shared on Facebook or in private groups. However, that's something U.S. intelligence agencies are trying to dispel. The Office of the Director of National Intelligence released a statement saying it agrees with the wide scientific consensus that COVID-19 has a natural origin. However, the Trump administration is kind of promoting a different story. Here's Secretary of State Mike Pompeo on ABC's This Week.
There's enormous evidence that that's where this began. We've said from the beginning that this was a virus that originated in Wuhan, China. We took a lot of grief for that from the outset, but I think the whole world can see now. Remember, China has a history of infecting the world, and they have a history of running substandard laboratories.
So again, there's this story about the virus, and I keep seeing it duplicated in a number of other places. On Facebook, for example, I've seen it a few times, but I'd like to just get to the bottom of this story. And then what about that wide scientific consensus?
Tim, I've got just the guy for you.
Thanks for having me on. My name is Stephen Goldstein. I'm currently a postdoctoral researcher here at the University of Utah, studying virus evolution, including evolution of coronaviruses and other types of viruses. Before I was here in Utah, I did my doctoral work at the University of Pennsylvania studying Middle East Respiratory Syndrome coronavirus, which first emerged from animals into people in 2012 and is the before the SARS coronavirus 2 that causes COVID-19, the last coronavirus that we know of to jump from animals into people. Unfortunately, has not caused a global pandemic, but continues to sporadically cause cases in humans that can be quite serious.
So I knew Stephen was the right person to turn to for this because I follow him on Twitter, and earlier this week he had a thread on this very topic where he pretty thoroughly explained what we know about where this coronavirus comes from. So I got him on Zoom and I played him those two clips, the Fox News clip and the statement from Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. And I asked him if the idea that the pandemic virus, COVID-19, was created in a lab and then released either intentionally or by accident, if that was plausible. And here's what he said.
So there's kind of two scenarios that have been conflated in a lot of ways, I think. One is, has this virus been engineered in a lab in any way? And the answer to that, we can say unequivocally, is no. There have been some really nice studies since January when the genome sequence of this virus was first published by really fantastic evolutionary virologists. And we can really say unequivocally, there are no signs that this virus was engineered or modified genetically in the laboratory. It's clearly a virus that comes from the wild that circulates naturally, almost certainly in bats. The second question is whether, you know, could a sample or an animal containing that virus have been collected in the wild and one suggestion was infected a researcher in the laboratory accidentally, and then that laboratory worker could have left the lab not knowing they're infected and introduced this virus into the population. That's something that we can't explicitly rule out, but right now there's simply no evidence for that. And we have ample evidence and precedent for these types of viruses going from animals to people without any sort of lab accident happening through the normal course of life, which unfortunately includes a high frequency of interaction between humans and wildlife. And that's really the major exposure point for us becoming infected by these viruses.
So to sort of break that apart, first, Goldstein says, look, we know because of research done by evolutionary virologists, people who look at genetic markers in the virus as it evolves from host to host to host, we know that it came from the wild, from bats, and that it hasn't been genetically modified in a lab. And then the second part of what he says is, this is something that we have a fair amount of precedent for. These coronaviruses have made the leap into humans in the past. See, for example, SARS or MERS and so on. Part of what's driving that is the interactions we're having as humans with wildlife, but also the interactions we're forcing between wildlife, between different species, in particular in the trade in wildlife that's happening in parts of China. Take a listen.
We can take the example of the original SARS coronavirus outbreak in 2003 that, with the benefit of hindsight that we'll ultimately have with this virus, we understand quite a bit about how that virus entered the human population. And like this virus, SARS coronavirus 2, the original SARS coronavirus was a bat virus. And what happened is through the combination or putting both wildlife and farmed animals or animals that are wildlife but also get farmed, kind of like we have deer farms in the United States, putting these animals in close proximity, you get the opportunity for viruses of those animals to cross species. The same way a bat virus can infect a person, a bat virus could infect, for example, a raccoon dog or an animal called a civet cat. And in 2003, we know that the SARS virus went from, in fact, bats to civet cats and raccoon dogs in these animal markets, these wet markets in China. And from there, we're able to infect people. And so I think the most likely scenario for SARS coronavirus 2 is that somehow this virus went from bats to another intermediate animal host, and then probably from there into people. It's possible that it went directly from bats into people. But kind of all these animals that don't belong together get put together, both in agriculture and in wildlife trafficking networks, which is where these pangolins were seized from. And so we're kind of creating all these unnatural ecological interactions that create the potential for viruses to cross over from the species that they naturally infect and are pretty harmless to those animals into other species, including us.
Oh, interesting.
Here's the thing. These viruses and their hosts, say bats or pangolins or civet cats or whatever, they co-evolve over millions of years. And the virus, from an evolutionary perspective, doesn't want the host animal to die. It wants to just live inside of it and keep, you know, reproducing indefinitely. And so after millions of years with a host species, it doesn't cause any illness, you know, any disease in these animals. But we haven't been co-evolving with it over millions of years, and so the right virus making the jump into humans has the potential to cause a pandemic, and that's something that we've known about for a long time.
So we knew about it in advance, but just didn't take action?
So there's a whole section of my conversation with Stephen Goldstein on funding for scientific research and how it's kind of reactive as opposed to proactive that I'm leaving out in the interest of time. But for now, I'll just say the answer is yes, Tim.
I recently actually talked to a virologist from the University of Utah about chronic wasting disease. So if you want to learn more about the effects of scientific research being reactive instead of proactive, you can listen to that episode of In the Hive on kcpw.org.
All right, nice plug there, Tim. But the truth is, a lot of research is being done on these viruses, and a lot of that research has been done in collaboration with Chinese scientists. And Goldstein says that he's worried about the future of those collaborations because, well, basically because of politics.
One of the things that I thought was particularly off the mark in the Fox News clip that we played was where he mentioned that it was thought that the Chinese researchers may have been working with these viruses to prove that they were as capable or more capable than the United States. In fact, the work with these viruses has been the subject of over a decade of collaboration between Chinese and American researchers. And a lot of what we know about these bat coronaviruses and the reason we knew that they were a concern is because of really productive collaborations. If the ability for these collaborations to happen is chilled, we're going to lose out. China is going to continue to do this work, but they're going to do it without us. And we have some great scientists that they can certainly benefit from. But the viruses are in China. So however great our scientists are, we can't study them without collaborating with our Chinese colleagues. And we have some evidence that this is already happening. A group called EcoHealth Alliance, which is a nonprofit organization based in New York, that's participated in a lot of these collaborations, finding bat coronaviruses in the wild, just had its NIH grant canceled, really for no clear reason. As far as I understand, they were not given any reason. Obviously, this kind of work has been politicized recently. I think that that grant in particular was brought up at a White House press briefing. So there are certainly concerns that politics are already starting to affect the kind of collaborations that we can have in the future.
So I'll just say science getting politicized is really stupid, but unfortunately happens all too often. But getting back to where we started, that this whole pandemic came from a lab that was somehow engineered in some like James Bond type subplot. We can pretty much just discount that, right?
Here's Goldstein on that point just before we got off our Zoom call on Tuesday.
You know, it's sort of an extraordinary claim because it hasn't happened before, whereas these viruses jump from animals into people all the time. And so I think everyone kind of understands the idea of like extraordinary claims should require extraordinary evidence. And not only is there not extraordinary evidence right now, there's no evidence.
Yeah, that's pretty definitive.
Yeah, I'd say so as well. Thanks very much to Stephen Goldstein, a postdoctoral researcher at the University of Utah who studies virus evolution and in particular coronavirus evolution. Thanks again, Stephen.
This has been another KCBW Community Curiosity. You can submit your own questions for us to answer at kcbw.org/curiosity.